Hi. What's on your cup?
It's Kip Aqua. What does that say?
Aquarium?
Yeah, that is what that says. Kip Aquarium, the Houston Zoo. Sorry, it's a big cup and I could only see like two letters at a time. Sorry, I need to get a little lubrication going.
Of course. And it's kind of hard to just jump right in.
It is a little hard to just jump right in. We never really talked about exactly how we were going to start this thing.
You know, like the first one's always going to be a mess.
The first one could, or it could be awesome. Let's not just put ourselves in a box.
Positive thinking.
Positive thoughts. Okay, so
first we should introduce ourselves. Yeah.
This is the podcast called
America's Sweethearts.
America's Sweethearts. I didn't know whether we finally decided on that as being the title or just what it's about. So, this is the podcast. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast America's Sweethearts. The podcast where we talk about America's Sweethearts and films. That's Bailey.
And that's Chaney.
And we're sisters. All right. So,
all right.
Should we talk about how we came up with this idea?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Well, so I have another podcast called Memory Static, and it focuses
on memory static.
Exactly. And we focus on movies that we loved when we were little, and we have a new guest, a new movie, a new original song that's written by me and our brother, Cullen. And someone, I always have someone else pick the movie, for the most part, and someone picked the movie Hook. And while I was researching Hook and learning about the way that Julia Roberts was treated by the media during that time, I thought it would be really interesting to learn more about her and her career in film. And that's kind of the launching point from that. We might actually talk about Hook later on.
Yeah, Bailey and I have been wanting to do a podcast for a while, and we've been talking about a whole bunch of different categories or topics that we could discuss, and we both love a lot of things, but one of our common loves is movies, and we both act, so we have a very soft spot for females in the film industry. It's hard work, so we appreciate it, and we want to know about it and about them and their struggles and all of their successes. So mm-hmm. We thought that this would be a good topic of conversation.
And it makes sense for us to do this right now while we're stuck at home.
Yes, exactly. We have so much time in our hands, so why not start now? So what we decided to do is break down all the movies into categories. And those categories are, let me see. We joined some together just to make it a little easier. And we have fantasy and sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
thriller, adventure.
Mm-hmm.
If you know them off the top of your head, then feel free to
drama,
and that encompasses all sorts of drama, like
historical drama.
Yeah. Then there's family,
yes,
family films, and
comedy and romantic comedy.
Comedy, romantic comedy, horror.
The point is that we drew four different categories.
Yeah, we decided that we should cover four movies from each actress that we decide to cover.
And so, possibly a fifth.
Possibly a fifth, depending on the amount of movies that this actress has produced. So for Julia Roberts, we would probably do five, but right now we're at four. And
mm-hmm. And you drew first.
I drew first, and I drew drama. And let me just say, I was not really in the mood for drama today. I mean, we are in a quarantine, and it's already mentally hard. So putting a drama on TV can be a little bit of a drag, but
it depends on the drama.
Yeah, it really does. And the movie I picked was Erin Brockovich, because it is such a milestone in Julia Roberts' career. As I was watching it, I mean...
And you'd never seen it before.
I had never seen it before. I was excited to get to watch what everybody has been talking about since, you know, 2000. So, you know, 20 years to actually watch it. But even though it is different, they're talking about all the things that the contaminated water has caused. And mm-hmm. I know that it's not the same thing. We're dealing with a whole different health crisis, but I couldn't help but relate, which made this even more of a hard movie to swallow right now.
Well, so I hadn't seen the movie either. And I'm also the same way. Well, I think that you watch more dramas than I do. I kind of actively avoid them most of the time, unless someone has me sit down and watch one. Because I expect them all to be like full of strife and often extremely sad. And I don't really like sad movies. I was pleasantly surprised by this movie. I really, really enjoyed it. But I understand what you're saying, the way that you connected to it in that way. The comparisons that I drew were with, have you watched Chernobyl on HBO?
No, I saw the movie that came out about 8 years ago. No, that was the Chernobyl Diaries, not the same thing.
What is that about?
These people go to Chernobyl and they aren't supposed to, and they get this guide to take them in because there's still radiation, so they have to kind of sneak in, and weird stuff starts happening. They start seeing things. Then there's like mutants.
And oh, weird.
The radiation starts getting to them. They start losing their eyesight. It's a lot. It was actually Nick and my first date. It has a very special place in my heart.
So it was a horror movie.
Yes.
Okay.
So not what you're talking about.
No. The HBO series, which is incredible. We both watch a lot of horror movies.
Yes.
And I'm not used to really being scared in a horror movie. Startled, yes, but most of the time it doesn't really affect me that much. Chernobyl did. It was really freaking me out. Because I think the idea of some unseen toxin or harmful thing affecting you when you don't even know it, because all these people went to the facility trying to clean it up and put the fire out, not realizing that they were exposing themselves to an obscene amount of radiation. Mm-hmm. And the repercussions of that were very extreme. I mean, a lot of people died. That was the comparison I was drawing, which like also made me immensely uncomfortable watching this movie, thinking about all of the hidden things that can be in such a important part of life, drinking water, and something we take for granted as being clean and safe.
Yeah. There's actually a girl that I know who doesn't drink water because she believes that, I'm not sure exactly her belief in it, but there's either government involvement or contamination or growth hormones or something in the water that she does not trust. So she doesn't drink water, which I just find fascinating.
Fluoride?
I don't know. I mean, this is a friend of a friend, so I can't, I don't know the story. I've only heard it from my friend. So I don't really know.
Well, I'd be curious to know because I know a lot of people distrust fluoride being in the water. And I don't really know, but I do listen to another podcast that had a whole episode about fluoride and why it's in the water. It's for your teeth. According to them, it doesn't do any harm. So, Aaron Brockovich.
Okay, so we're going to start off with some little tidbits of information that I did research on.
Great.
Because you told me that I needed to. Now, this is a quote from Erin Brockovich herself. She wrote an article, and it said that the movie had a lot of positive and negative effects on my life, and I didn't aspire for this to happen. All I was doing was what was in my heart to do, and that was to extend my hand of friendship, understanding, and compassion toward another. Had my intentions been anything other than pure, this case, this movie, and my life as it is today would not exist. And I thought that was really lovely. Watching this movie, there are times where I actually did not like Erin. She's not the most likable. It took me a while to really back her.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Julia Roberts did a really good job of playing that humanity, because not everyone is likable, and especially not likable all the time. So I actually really enjoyed that. But the heart of it always came through. She's such a passionate person, and she played that passion flawlessly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she is a very compassionate character.
Yes.
She really cares about the people she's trying to help. But she's also very strong-willed, and that is part of the reason why she was able to continue to push this forward. But it also has a poor effect on her relationships sometimes.
Right. And she does not handle those with the kind of care that she handles in other ways with other people. So it's frustrating, because you're like, well, if you just change your perspective. So, I mean, it was very frustrating for me to watch at times, because mm-hmm.
Communication.
She has such a good heart. Yes.
Yeah. In some ways, she was a very poor communicator.
In other ways, she's so concise, and people underestimate her.
Mm-hmm.
And she just comes out with these quips or these monologues and just puts these people in their place.
I love how she turns other people's bias back around on them. Say mm-hmm. like, well, you know, if you see me this way, then I'm going to see you this way.
Yep.
And you're not going to like it because it's unfair. So stop being unfair to me.
Yep. Now, getting into some of the background of what this movie did for Julia Roberts. This is from lovelist.com. Julia Roberts received a whopping $20 million for her role as Erin, and as a result, it was her becoming the first woman to break the $20 million barrier in Hollywood. And that's huge. From, I think, in the article I read. Now, I'm going to be doing a lot of paraphrasing, so please, no one hold me to this, because, like I said, I am not a great researcher. I honestly don't know the rules, so I'm going to say...
Neither of us are experts. We're just having fun talking about it.
We're just having fun. So if I say that it's from a website that I found, then I'm doing my best in trying to give someone credit.
My sources are somethingorother.com.
But this one I did find on Lovelist. The next part I think I found on something else, so I don't know. But I read that... From sometime in the 80s to 2000, that she was the only woman who had broken that barrier. She was definitely...
That's so wild. I wonder how many men were paid above that at that point in time.
That I didn't find. I did not find that. The article only focused on that she was the first. It did not bring anybody else into it.
Well, she was the biggest woman actor of the time.
Yeah, she was. No, Julia Roberts had to play the part right-handed. Did you know that?
Is she left-handed?
She's actually left-handed.
Oh my gosh. Wow, what a challenge. Why did she have to?
Well, because she was playing a real person, and if the real person is right-handed and she's left-handed, then...
That seems really persnickety. You know, like, nobody other than the people in Erin Brockovich's main circle would know that she was left-handed.
Well... She.
Well, I mean, now we do.
Yeah, we do now.
Because Julia Roberts.
She is one of two Academy Award winning best actresses to play a right-handed character when they're actually left-handed. The other one is Nicole Kidman. And she did that playing Virginia Woolf in The Hours in 2003.
I haven't seen The Hours.
You know, when I was in college, one of my professors said that each character you take on, you have to think about every single detail, like how to pick up a cup and are they right-handed or left-handed. And I remember this conversation because it's really hard.
Well,
but now reading that there have been only two that have done it in film, it makes me want to try it sometime. I mean, I don't think that I've had a character that just calls to me saying, you need to do this left-handed. It's not something
It's interesting. It's a physicality that I haven't really thought much about as far as creating a character. Because, like, working as a performer at the Ren Faire, which I haven't done in a while, we get to build the characters from the ground up, and even, like, our own names and where we come from, because, like, we're often not cast as a specific character. So we do come up with particular character walks and gestures and stuff like that, obviously. But I never even considered creating a character with a that's left-handed. I almost said with a left hand.
Ugh. And I think, I don't know, it's such a strange departure, because you can imagine, maybe this character has a limp, or maybe they have a back issue, so you lean forward, or you can add some sort of physicality, but you are not left-handed. And even though you may not have I don't know how to describe it. It's more than just thinking outside of your box.
It disrupts the connections in your brain, because you're used to being right side dominant or being left side dominant. Your brain is used to functioning with not having to think about that. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly you're playing a character, remembering lines, trying to be present in the scene, and also make it convincing to use a hand that you're not used to using. That's intense.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've seen me try to write with my left hand. It's not cute. So I can only imagine the practice that she had to go through to make sure that her writing with her right hand looked normal.
I wish that I had known that watching it. I would have tried to pay attention.
So I was doing research while I was watching it, but I unfortunately came across this after the majority of her writing. So
too bad.
I didn't. Yeah, yeah. All right, moving on. Now, this is from Wikipedia. Roberts won an Academy Award, a BAFTA, a Golden Globe Award, Screen Actors Guild Award, and various critics' awards for Best Actress for this film. And the film itself was also nominated for a Best Picture. So if that doesn't say everything.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that I finally watched this movie, because I probably would not have gone out of my way to watch it, except... I know you're a Schitt's Creek fan.
I am.
I just recently caught up on all of Schitt's Creek on Netflix.
I actually haven't. We haven't finished the last season yet, but...
Okay, well, this won't ruin anything, but at one point... What's the dad's name? Eugene Levy's character's name.
All I can think is David.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, goodness. I can't
And anyway, at one point he... Gosh, I can't think of any of the characters now.
Roland.
He gets mad at Roland because he brings a TV into the lobby of the hotel, and he's sitting on the couch with his buddies watching Aaron Brockovich. And Eugene Levy gets mad at him and sends him out to do work. And then he sits down and starts watching it, and he says, "Has she broken up with the boyfriend yet?" So that spoiled it a little bit for me.
You know, it took me... quite a long time. I'm a little ashamed of this, that I didn't make the connection between Roland's name.
That his name Roland is... Schitt. I think it took me a little too long too.
Okay.
Sorry, back to it.
Moving back.
It was sort of on topic.
Yeah, okay, so also from Wikipedia, the next two things are going to be from Wikipedia. Newsweek magazine's David Anson began his review with Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts is flat-out terrific in Aaron Brockovich. Furthermore, he wrote, Roberts has wasted her effervescence on plantry projects, but she hit the jackpot this time. Which, I mean, sorry to interrupt his comment, but I think that she... even though not all of her projects have showed all of her talent, to say that she's wasted it is a bit harsh.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's a lot of merit in the other movies that she did. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being in a romantic comedy or a fantasy.
No. Or anything other than
drama.
Drama.
But, drama is what wins the awards.
Yeah, well... but there are plenty of other good films out there that you shouldn't just look down upon someone's acting because,
That's critics' prejudice.
Yes. Well, there's more, and I'm moving to that.
I can't wait.
She really hit the jackpot this time. Erin, single mother of three, a former Miss Wichita, who rallies a community to take on a multi-million dollar corporation, is the richest role of her career, simultaneously showing off her comedic, dramatic, and romantic chops. I mean, this role really does cover a lot. I mean, she does have those moments of comedy. They're aren't maybe like 5 or 6 moments that really shine for comedy.
Mm-hmm. But she has a huge range in this character.
She has a huge range. It really is a great role for her to show that off. But there was another reporter who basically said that she, and I'm going to be paraphrasing this because I didn't write this one down, that the first 30 minutes, she wanted to show us that she could win an award. The second half, or the next 90 minutes, was her just being a movie star. And I was like, okay, one, movies aren't shot in
That makes me
order.
So grumpy.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, she, for all we know, she shot the last scene first.
Yeah.
So to say that she just gave up the second half of the film, that's not...
No, that would be more of a writing and directing kind of thing, wouldn't it?
Maybe.
But I don't agree with it at all. I thought she was phenomenal throughout the whole movie.
I mean, I thought her performance only kept getting stronger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, no, go ahead. We can talk about specific parts of the movie later.
That's all I have to say about critics. I mean, there was... Well, actually, that's not true. There was mixed reviews, but they were predominantly very... for her, as, I mean, the awards showed, but they were really worried about her performance because, not necessarily her performance, but the writing and Erin Brockovich herself, they performed it in front of a test audience and it did well, but executives at Universal Studios were worried that the audiences would be turned off by the title character's use of profane language. I mean, she does use the F word a lot, and she...
Well, I think in the year 2000, it was pretty shocking to have
right,
a woman
I was gonna say.
Have that many curse words in their dialogue.
That's what I was going to say. Because nowadays, we can watch something on TV and, you know, sometimes we don't even notice when there's cursing anymore because it's just so...
ubiquitous.
Yeah. So it just goes to show how much of a trailblazer she really was.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was like, you know what? I'm going to do this film because it matters and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And that means really getting behind these words. And if people don't like it, then they don't like it.
Well, I wonder like how much of that comes from the real person. If she was known for being kind of like...
She was.
Yeah.
She was. So Erin Brockovich said that this movie was very, very truthful to her life. And about 98% accurate. There were some discrepancies, like she wasn't actually Miss Wichita. She was Miss something else.
So she was something. A beauty queen from some other state.
Some other state. So there was like little indiscrepancies, but the majority, she was like, that was a perfect representation of me.
She's in the movie.
Yeah, she is. She actually plays the waitress.
Yeah,
towards the beginning.
I read a couple articles about her, and I actually watched the movie twice. I watched it once and drank wine, and then I watched it the next day and took notes.
Oh.
I'd read some stuff about her, about Erin Brockovich, and as I was watching it, I was like, that waitress looks like Erin Brockovich. Could she possibly be in this movie? And she did a great job.
She was. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I had to burp. Okay. In December of 2000, Roberts, who had been the highest paid actress, which we already talked about, through the 1990s, became the first actress to make Hollywood Reporter's list of the 50 most influential women in show business since the list had begun in 1992. So this was definitely a huge marker for Julie Roberts' career. And after watching it, I can see why. Now, that we got the research out of the way.
Oh, it was just so rough.
Oh, it was so rough.
No, you didn't.
Now
a great job.
We can talk about. Thank you. I tried. I know that. I think putting critics' reviews in was a bit cheating, but I don't care because I met your 5-point criteria, which was make 5 points. So
did I say that?
Maybe I did because I didn't want more. Okay, so now we can just talk about. The movie.
Great.
And what we liked and what we didn't like and our thoughts and everything.
I thought the opening was great.
Could you be more specific?
You start with her like just having an interview and the camera's only on her and she's like, she seems to be selling it because we don't know anything about her yet.
And then you see the doctor's face and...
He's not impressed.
Not impressed.
And so then she leaves and gets in her car and... gets in a car accident, which was really terrifying. I thought she was going to run the red light, and then it turned green, and I was like, oh, she's okay. I misread that. And then she got sideswiped by a car. Or not sideswiped. What is that called? T-boned.
Yeah. And what I love about that shot is that we do get to see that she had the green light. So we know that she's an honest person. Because during the whole trial scene, if you don't know, if you're just sitting in that jury, I mean, they definitely played bias against her.
Oh,
they
yeah. Were,
like, they brought up her divorces. They brought up the fact that she didn't have a job. That she was, you know, struggling with money.
That she's just playing this off to
get a paycheck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I love that we actually got to see that she was in the right, that mm-hmm. That light was green for her. So despite her quote unquote character flaws, we can trust her.
Yeah. And we learn a lot about her from the trial, too. I mean, not only that she's honest, but that she stands up for herself in a pretty abrasive way.
I'll say.
And also, like, is not afraid to call out unfairness and sexism. Right at the beginning, when I saw, like, the way that was turning, I was like, oh.
And I'm glad that you brought that up, because now I can segue into the outfits of this movie.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Now, if I'm being completely honest with myself, I should say that I have about 50% of those shirts in my closet.
Yeah, I actually thought about you while watching this movie. not that I was like, oh, Chaney owns those clothes, but when Erin goes and starts working in the law firm, I think they had her wear the most shocking outfit right away.
The leopard print?
Well, it's like, no, it's a sheer, is it leopard print? It's a sheer shirt where you can see her black bra.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, cheetah. It was cheetah.
And
print.
It's just so out of place for the office that it is mm-hmm. like, it does catch you off guard. But mm-hmm. when, what's his name? Is his name Ed? Ed. No.
Yes, Ed.
Is it Ed? Yes, Ed. Mm-hmm. When Ed tells her that she should rethink her wardrobe. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you should rethink that tie.
Uh-huh.
She's like, I think I look great. And, you know, I don't care, like, if I make other people feel uncomfortable. And it made me think of you telling that guy off.
Yeah. So I've had a few moments in my life where I've stood up for my clothing choices. Because from an early age, we were told, you know, boys think differently and you shouldn't make them think certain ways. And I'm like, I have no control over what they're going to think.
Right.
I can wear a turtleneck. They still may have those thoughts.
Right. Well, it's telling you that you are responsible for what happens to you because they can't control themselves.
Right. And so from an early age, I always thought, you know what? If I like it, I'm going to wear it. If it makes me feel confident, I'm going to wear it. If I feel comfortable in it, I'm going to wear it. I don't care what someone else might think or what thoughts they may have about this, because I can't control their thoughts.
Right.
So I very much identified with her on that level. The story that Bailey was telling that she mentioned was, I went to a theater statewide convention. There was a night where we all got to dress up, and I was wearing a dress that was low cut, and we were walking down the street, and this guy started telling me that I was going to go to hell because I was not modest and all of this stuff, and shouting very ugly things at me. And also he had a cross that had some very ugly things written on it about who should be going to hell. And I stood up for my choices. I stood up for all those people on that cross, and I shouted some Bible verses back at him. It was I may not have behaved in the way that I probably should have, but I don't regret standing up for myself.
I've always been better at thinking in the moment and having something to say.
I mean, I think better when I'm angry and trying to yell at someone than I am on this podcast.
I think you're doing great.
Well, thanks. I'm not always eloquent, but I try.
I think that most people struggle with being eloquent. We all have moments and brain farts. But yeah, I think they had her wear the most shocking clothes in that first time in the office so that they could have that moment and have us on that ride as the audience to, like, say, like, were you also questioning that? Were you also judging her for this? I think it was a gentle way to go about it.
Yeah, and honestly, a lot of her costumes I didn't have a problem with. That one, the cheetah print with the bra underneath, was probably the only one that I was like, that's just not really appropriate for the workplace.
Right. Well, that's exactly why it's shocking. I didn't actually think, oh, she shouldn't be wearing that. It was just, wow, that's an interesting choice for the office.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about a law firm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was one outfit that just stood out above the rest, which was, to me, outside of that one, because obviously that's the one that everybody's probably, if they think of Erin Brockovich in this movie, they think mm-hmm. of that cheetah print with the bra. But this one, it was a red leather zip-up vest,
mm-hmm.
and then she wore this pink suede skirt and jacket on top of it, and all I could think of was, I feel like this is Charmed. I feel like I'm watching Charmed.
Oh, how funny.
It just was so 90s to me.
So do you know what time this is supposed to take place in? Is it supposed to be in the 90s?
Yes, I believe so. It took place in the early 90s.
Okay.
I think it was like 92.
Okay. I was wondering, because sometimes the wardrobe choices for different characters, especially the colors and maybe like the collar and stuff, looked very mm-hmm. 70s to me. But most of the other things didn't look 70s. So I was trying to figure that out.
Let me double check that real fast, because that's kind of important information to know. Hold on, please. Why don't you talk while I look at this?
Right. So there's the scene where she is first starting to question why these files include medical information for the clients. And so she starts researching, and like she interviews the people first before she starts researching. But it kind of sends her on this journey of gathering information. And the first place that she goes to is some kind of college. And she's talking to, I guess, a professor, I was assuming so. And they're walking down a hallway, and she's got her notebook, and she's digging up the information, and her outfit to me, like it evoked Scooby-Doo.
And oh, so, yes. It was the green shirt.
Yes.
Is that we're talking about?
The green shirt and the reddish skirt. And
it was very, very retro.
I was like, why do I think Scooby-Doo? And I looked up Velma, and Velma wears an orange sweater and a red skirt, and Daphne wears a purple dress, but she wears a green ascot.
It was definitely more Daphne.
And, well, the top was Daphne because it was the exact same color of her ascot. And then the skirt was Velma. So she was a combination of the two characters. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I feel like it might have been.
It might have been. Who knows?
Because like in the next scene, she talks to Shaggy.
We probably could know if we did more research, but, you know. So I was actually correct. It was in 1993.
Okay.
That's when she started putting this case to, or, well, I guess she might have started in 1992, but it's based in 1993. Yeah, there are a lot of choices for outfits. I mean, not just hers, but a lot of the outfits, I just, oof. Oof. My favorite accessory, or I don't know whether it would fall under accessories or costume, was the what is his name? George, is that the biker's name?
Yes.
George, when he had his hair up in his ponytail and they kissed for the first time and it was this red scrunchie, I was just like,
I didn't notice.
It's the back of his head, and that's the main, like, focus on the shot is his head coming towards her, and all you see is just this red scrunchie.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, that's such a choice. And then I was like, you know what, though? It's very real.
Yes.
Because especially in the 90s, we just put a scrunchie in her hair. It didn't care what color it was. It was just...
It was something to hold your hair up.
It was something to hold your hair up.
Can we talk about that kiss for a moment?
Okay.
I don't know about you, but I'm kind of over the emotional kiss where someone is having a really hard time and they're vulnerable, especially a woman, and then the man decides to kiss the woman in that moment.
Especially, she just goes, are you going to be something that I'm going to have to get over, or whatever she says, get past or overcome or whatever the phrase is, and he's just kisses her.
Yeah, that's not
and
an I'm answer.
Like, that was not an answer.
And also I couldn't tell if she was receptive to that or not, because it looked like she couldn't breathe.
And it wasn't until the end of the kiss
she when started she kiss back.
Yeah. He released, and then she went forward. But yeah, I was like, okay, all right. So she just asked you if you were going to hurt her, and instead you just kiss her.
Yeah, that's deflecting.
Yeah.
Although moving on into the relationship, he was a very giving partner.
He was, and she couldn't be what he needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sad for them. But and that was one of the hardest scenes for me to watch, was when he was like, I've been trying. And asking her to quit her job is a lot. And I don't think that was probably the best solution.
Also, how could she quit when there's so many people relying on her?
Right.
Which, like, I don't understand why when he said that, she was like, people respect me. I'm like, that's not right. The most important thing.
That's why that scene was so hard to watch, because I was like, there's no communication happening here. No. Neither of them are telling what they really want, mm-hmm. or they're not fighting for what they want.
No.
They're like, okay, this is how it is. Either you can conform or that's it. There was no trying to communicate,
and
trying to compromise. Yeah, it was. Well, I was going to give you these earrings. That was 6 months
this
ago.
This is so dramatic.
Haven't done anything
it's
nice.
So dramatic. It's not, yes. not the kindest way to go about that conversation.
No. I mean, it makes a point. And if she'd really been like horrid to him, then I can see him doing that. But she was just kind of absent.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like she was, I mean, she always said, I'm sorry, I got to do this. Can you please
watch the kids,
take the baby, because I got to go and do this. I'm sorry. It wasn't like, okay, see you later. Got to do my job. Bye.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know. Their relationship kind of frustrated me, because it's like what we talked about at the beginning. She's very concise and brilliant when she's talking to other people. But when it comes to like those personal relationships, she just has a hard time communicating.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense. So there was the scene where she is trying to get samples of the water, and then there's the frog.
Yes.
Okay, all I could think about while she's like straddling the pond and reaching over, and all I could think of was, man, she has some long arms and legs. I would have fallen face first into this contaminated water and trying to reach that frog. I would have to get a 10-foot pole to reach that.
Yeah.
She just does it with her arms.
Well, and if she needs a little more length, she just has to, like, reach her fingers out.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm short, but come on, Julia. Do you have to rub it in? All right. Anything else, Bailey?
That moment where she's in the car and she hears from George that she's missed her baby's first words.
Mm-hmm.
That was some incredible phone acting.
Yeah. And so in film, you don't always have the
lines delivered.
Yeah, you don't have the lines delivered for you. Or sometimes you can have, like, Nick and I watch or listen to The Office Ladies. It's a podcast with the woman who plays Pam and the woman who plays Angela.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about this, about a phone call that Pam had with Jim, I think. And she was like, normally we don't have someone on the other line, but for this particular phone call, they actually had Jim talking to me. And so I was able to really feel in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if Julie Roberts actually had someone on the other line, or if she just had to pull that out from her belly.
That is a good question, because I assumed that there wasn't.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. But it was very, very tender and very sweet.
One other thing that I wanted to talk about is her relationship that she ends up having with her boss.
Mm-hmm.
It was tumultuous at first, but they end up really understanding each other. And he loves her. I love, like, there's all these moments where he hears other people underestimate her the way he used to, and he just looks at her waiting for her response,
mm-hmm.
which I think is so funny.
There were a couple of really good moments. I think the turning point for them was when he said F you and she said F you back. And then he just started laughing and he was like, sometimes I really do hate you.
And she's like, you love me.
I think that was the moment that they really, that he switched. Yeah. He flipped. My two favorite moments with him is when the lawyers that they partnered with said, how did you get this information? And then she said that she, there was like 600 something clients and that she...
that she gave sexual favors.
Sexual favors for each one of them.
And then she was so tired.
Ugh, I'm just so tired. And he pulls out the seat for her, lets her sit, and then he just kind of cracks the smile. And it's just so... he's like, okay, I'm just going to let her be and let her be her.
And she just stares unwavering at the people with a smile.
Yeah. Yeah. That moment, and then, of course, at the end when he finally gets the upper hand with her. And
yes, it's so good. And she's speechless for once. She's has no words.
Absolutely speechless. Then he goes, did they teach beauty queens how to apologize? Because you suck at it, which is what she said at the beginning about lawyers. And then he dances away.
He's so been waiting wonderful. For that. For the entire movie.
and while she is berating him about taking money out of her bonus, he's trying so hard not to smile. Yeah, that's just some wonderful acting on his part as well. And they really did do a great job as a pair in this film. Oh, one little fun thing that I came across while doing research, just a little faux pas. There's two. One, there's a website at the beginning on a billboard that when she's standing up against the wall and smoking right before she takes the ticket off of her car and gets in the car and gets in the car accident.
Yeah.
At that point in time, although the internet was a thing, that particular website was not, or something like that. So that's an anachronism for the film. But my favorite is the actor who played George was Aaron Eckhart. And when he's playing games with the kids and Julia Roberts comes in, she's like, okay, time for bed. Go to bed. The little boy goes, okay, good night, Aaron, and calls him by his actual name.
Oh my gosh, I didn't notice that.
So I had actually read that one before it got to that part
of the
movie.
So you noticed
so,
it.
Yeah, oh, and I was like, that's amazing.
That's like the Starbucks cup in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
They just leave it in and hope no one notices.
Hope no one notices. And there was a few other ones I didn't read, though. But if you're looking for some fun little flops in films, you can look up those, too, because that was fun. Anyway, that's all I have.
Did you notice that the first woman that she talks to, the victim of the water toxin, I recognized her. I couldn't place her. I looked her up, and she plays Catherine in CSI.
Yes, yes. I knew that she was from one of them.
She does an amazing job in this movie.
She, honestly, I think that that's the best that I've seen her do.
Going back a little bit, that one scene where Aaron is trying to get her to accept that she's been lied to by Pacific Energy and Gas, is that right?
Yeah, it's PGE.
Okay.
Pacific Gas and Energy, okay. I think.
And Julia Roberts does it very gently. And, you know, every argument that she makes, she's like, well, but why this? And why did they say that? And you can see the denial and then the realization. And then she looks up at her kids playing in the pool and suddenly panics and runs out and grabs them. I was like, it's so real.
Yeah. And I also loved the moment where she's in bed. And the lighting in that scene was beautiful, too. She's in bed and Julia Roberts comes and sits on the bed with her and she's like, if you have a mastectomy and you have a hysterectomy, are you still a woman?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so raw and so beautiful. And that was probably one of my favorite parts of the movie. It was really, really touching, really well done and heartbreaking.
Yes.
So, well, on that note, I mean, all of the things when, they're the plaintiff, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what is the other side called?
Defense.
Sure. When the defense comes in and they're doing their first settlement or their first settlement offer, I guess. Oh, no, maybe not. I can't remember. There's so many times when there's offers. Oh, no, it's when it's when there's the woman and the two men on the defense, and they offer
$250,000.
And then Julia Roberts starts naming all of these ailments, like someone's spine deteriorating, or someone having to have a hysterectomy at 20, or this, that. The range of things that that water caused is just...
It's terrifying.
Terrifying. It's horrific. I mean, there's like five different kinds of cancers that came from it.
And it's so upsetting that major corporation went through all of these efforts to not take responsibility for their mistake. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. But one of the best moments in the film is when, at the end of that monologue, when the woman goes to grab the water, and she says, oh, we had that specially brought in from Hinkley for you. And the woman seriously contemplates drinking it just to make the point, but can't bring herself to do it because she knows.
She knows. She knows that they're wrong.
Yep. So, I mean, it's a very powerful movie. Bravo to the real Aaron Brockovich for working so hard to save so many people. I mean, who knows how many people were saved by stopping that then and getting those people that had already been hurt so much money and could actually pay for all the damages. It's absolutely incredible. And bravo to our star, Julia Roberts, for the amazing portrayal.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching the other movies and seeing what her performance is like in those movies as well. Because in this movie, like, it's been a really long time since I've watched a movie with her in it. And she is just so magnetic.
She really is. And she doesn't really smile a whole bunch in this movie.
When she does.
But I like that she doesn't, because when she does, it's even better.
Yes. It's like a punch to your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm really glad that I ended up picking this movie, because there was a lot of other options. I mean, there's like Mona Lisa Smile and Eat, Pray, Love and Conspiracy Theory or Stepmom. Ugh, I love Stepmom. That one's a really, really sad one, though. But there was a lot of other dramas that we could have picked. But I'm really glad that I settled on this one, because it was such a big step for Julia Roberts in her career.
Yeah, an important movie.
An important movie. She got all of those awards. She became one of the 50 most influential women, the first actress ever to be put on that list. And of course, getting the message out of the triumph of this case. So, yeah, I'm glad that I chose it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, kudos Julia Roberts for an amazing performance. And everyone else that did a really great job in it too.
Yeah. Well done, everyone. Congratulations.
So should we tease what we're doing next time or just flat out say it?
Well, I don't even remember what we're doing next time, so that's up to you.
That's right. Neither do I. Was it fantasy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so we're doing fantasy next. So see if you can figure out what we're going to cover.
Yes, if anyone's Bailey listening. Drew fantasy, so it's Bailey's choice. So what do you think Bailey would like? Okay. Well, this has been America's Sweethearts.
Yeah. First run.
First run. Things are bound to change.
So I guess we're signing off.
Okay, then.
Okay.
Signing off.
Signing off. Bye.
Goodbye.